Good to be back amongst you again. And I must say it's nice now to come and look out and see familiar faces, familiar friendly faces. It's wonderful. I want to begin today reading you a poem. Some of you may know this poem already. It's by Jan Richardson, who happens to be a bit of a favourite of mine. And the poem is called Warning. So let's hear this poem. Before you enter this terrain, there are a few things you should know. There is no entry fee, but it will cost you plenty to make this journey. Pack a lunch, lose your map, travel lightly. The weather is unpredictable. I am prone to sudden washouts, to the startling crumbling of earth. It's good to watch your step. But what is underneath is strong, and you are welcome to settle there, to rest for the night or stay for the season. Be careful at dusk. It's when the beasts come to the water. And it's not that they would devour you, but they are protective of their terrain and will not easily yield. I can tell you, they will never be utterly tamed, but with choice morsels and soothing words, you may have them eating from your hands. If these warnings sound harsh, good. This terrain is not for the faint of heart, or for those who would travel its contours crudely, littering its landscape and stripping its soil. But I think you are made of stronger stuff and more tender than you already know the lay of this land. How its treasures will yield to your searching fingers, how its well springs will ease your traveller's thirst, how its brambles and thorns will give way to the waiting hidden garden where grows the sweetest, most exquisite fruit waiting to be consumed. I find this poem very powerful, and I find that it says much about the spiritual life. And so just hold whatever resonated with you or whatever stirred in you or caught your attention as we talk about this together. So as Jenny said yesterday, I had the privilege of spending the afternoon with your elders. They invited me to lead them in a time of exploring how to foster, how to deepen spirituality. I shared with them that the invitation that they are offering you all, including themselves, is a risky one. To deepen one's spirituality, to live a more contemplative life, may sound like a wonderful, comfortable existence, but it's actually a venture into untamed territory, as Jan Richardson puts it. As she says, this terrain is not for the faint-hearted, but contains treasures, hidden springs, and exquisite fruit waiting for each of you. So what is it about this space that makes it risky? What are these beasts that Jan Richardson say come to the water at dusk? I believe it's twofold. I think the riskiness is, firstly, that we come face to face with ourselves, and secondly, that we come face to face with God. So let me start with coming face to face with God. That's probably the easy place to start. If we look at the scriptures, when people come face to face with God in the scriptures, The first one that came to mind for me was Moses. Moses goes up the mountain, has this experience with God, comes down and he's shining somehow. We don't know exactly what it looked like, but he's radiant. And the people are scared. They're scared. They're frightened by what they see in him. And so he covers himself with a veil. At the Transfiguration, when the disciples see Jesus transformed before them and they hear the voice of God speaking, this amazing, mysterious experience, what do the disciples do? They fall down terrified. And at Saul's conversion on the road to Damascus, we're told that the people who are travelling with him are left speechless. Coming face to face with God is not for the faint-hearted. It reminds me a bit of an image of God that C.S. Lewis used in The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, and I'm sure some of you are familiar with this story. Aslan is the image of God in this story. And when the children ask Mr. and Mrs. Beaver about Aslan, this is how the conversation goes. Is he a man? Asked Lucy. Aslan, a man? Said Mr. Beaver. Certainly not. I tell you, he's the king of the woods and the son of the great emperor beyond the sea. Don't you know who is the king of beasts? Aslan is a lion, the lion, the great lion. Oh, said Susan, I thought he was a man. Is he quite safe? I shall feel rather nervous about meeting a lion. That you will, dearie, and no mistake, said Mrs. Beaver. If there's anyone who can appear before Aslan without their knees knocking, they're either braver than most or else just silly. Then he isn't safe, said Lucy. Safe, said Mr. Beaver. Don't you hear what Mrs. Beaver tells you? Who said anything about safe? Of course he isn't safe. But he's good. He's the king, I tell you. So whether we're talking about this image of a powerful lion or a miraculous transformation on a mountain or the life-changing God moments that just happen in the ordinariness of life, coming face to face with God changes us, transforms us. And let's face it, change is scary. Kendall Payne, who I think I shared one of her songs with some of you on Easter camp, she's a Christian singer from the US, and she's got a song that's titled Aslan, and where she's obviously drawing on the imagery from C.S. Lewis and The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. And she sings these words in the song. So she's taking it a little further. She's taking this into her life and her experience. She says, he won't say the words you wish that he could. He won't do the deeds you know that he could. He won't think the thoughts you think he should. But he is good. He is good. She goes on, I know you're thirsty. The water is free. But I should warn you, it costs everything. And then a little later on again, she says, lay down your layers, shed off your skin. But without his incision, you can't enter in. He cuts deep. Yeah, he cuts deep. When the risk is great and the talk is cheap, but he never leaves a wounded one behind. Kendall Payne seems to understand the cost of this journey. She seems to hold in tension the risk in coming to God face to face and the immense transformation that's possible in that moment. She asks the question, which It hadn't dawned on me until we just sang the song. That this is in Come As You Are as well. She asked the question in the song, are you tempted to run away? Are you tempted to run away? Is this too hard? And you heard in the song it says, don't run away, ashamed and disheartened. So that's the question I'm asking today. Are we tempted to run away? I know that this God that we're speaking of, it's not about a vengeful God. It's not about an angry God or a judging God, as some people might portray the divine. That is not what is to be feared here. That's not the scary part. I think the reality is that when we come face to face with God, we also come face to face with ourselves. All of our fears, all of our anxieties, our insecurities, our flaws, they all become exposed in the spotlight of God. This doesn't happen like we're a suspect in an interrogation room, or it's not like a doctor checking us over to looking for some sign of disease. No. We are held in this space, in the loving gaze of our God. But we can't hide. We can't pretend. We can't put on our masks that have been so effective all of our lives. We can only be real, authentic, who we truly are in this place. It sounds wonderful to say that, but from my experience, I can vouch that it's uncomfortable at best and downright scary often. Yesterday with the elders, I used a Wendell Berry poem to frame what we were talking about. And I shared that Wendell Berry wrote a series of poems. He just called them the Sabbath poems. And they were poems that he wrote every Sunday. He would go for a walk in the woods and he would write a poem from his experience with God in the woods. So there's many of them and spanned over many years of his life. And in the first poem, so this is Sabbath poem one, the very first one, he talks about coming among the trees. And it's this beautiful picture of coming into the presence of God. But the middle two stanzas of the poem are particularly intriguing. And we did talk a little bit about these yesterday. So this is what he says in those middle two stanzas. So he's in the trees, lying in the grass, in the presence of God, and he says, then what is afraid of me comes and lives a while in my sight. What it fears in me leaves me, and the fear of me leaves it. It sings and I hear its song. Then what I am afraid of comes and lives a while in my sight. What I fear in it leaves it, and the fear of it leaves me. It sings and I hear its song. These are such insightful words, I find, ones that we probably need to sit with for more than a few minutes. We need a whole day, probably. Then what is afraid of me comes and lives a while in my sight. This is a very personal and individual thing for each of us. So the only way I can talk about what Berry is saying here is to share from my own experience. For me, the thing I was afraid of that has dared to emerge and live a while in my sight is actually my own voice. I think I shared a little bit of this story on Easter camp with those of you who were there, but part of my very nature is to tell myself that I'm not capable, I don't know enough yet, and therefore I don't have anything important to say. For those of you who know the Enneagram, it's a five thing. It's a five thing. So for me, the contemplative life, coming face to face with God and with myself, allowed this voice to emerge from the shrubs and be in my presence. As we sat longer together, what it feared in me, which was the need to have it all together, left me. And the fear in my voice out there also left. I'm not naive enough to say those fears don't re-emerge. Of course they do. But somehow the longer I spend in the woods, as Berry terms it, or in a still place with my God, the more the fear subsides. But Berry doesn't stop there. He then says, then what I am afraid of comes and I live for a while in its sight. And what I fear in it leaves it, and the fear of it leaves me. It sounds very similar. And for some of us, that could be linked. But there's a subtle difference here. It's a difference in how it affects us and how it is perceived by us. For me, though, it is the same thing. I'm afraid of my own voice. I'm afraid if I speak up, what the repercussions will be. Will people like me? Will I make enemies? Will I belong anymore? But the longer I linger in this quiet place with God, the more my fear of this voice subsides. Fear can be debilitating. It can paralyze us or cause us to run away. But the challenge here is for us to come face to face with our fears. And the result is transformation. Berry in the poem says, it sings and I hear its song. How beautiful is that? It, the thing I fear, the thing that fears me, sings and I hear its song. So what is it that fears you? What is it that you are afraid of? What in you longs to sing? And what stops you? These desires and longings find strength when we come face to face with God and ourselves. This all sounds like a very individual journey. And for a lot of people it is. For each of us, we must make this journey. But the question your elders asked yesterday was how, as a community, you might be able to foster or create a space where all of you can know this life and still live together. That's the trick, isn't it? And still live together. Churches that can create this space are a rare breed. It should be, I think, the core business of what we do. But churches that can create a space like this are rare. The reading we shared from Luke gives us a good example. The disciples had been fishing and caught next to nothing. Jesus comes along and says, go out again and put your nets into deeper water. They were probably tired from the day's work and skeptical of Jesus' advice. But they went, and their boats were overflowing with fish. As a community, sometimes we are tired, perhaps a little stale in our spiritual lives from time to time. But it may only take one person, one of you, to say, let's try a little deeper. Let's go and give it another shot. One person. And the short phrases from Matthew remind us of the treasure we're talking about here, the pearl, the pearl of great price, the treasure in the field. The cost is great, but the treasure is immense. When things become hard, when for some the journey is too fearful, when a life of comfort is more desirable, we can remind each other to come out to the field to find the treasure that's there, that we know is there. And so I'm going to finish what I'm saying today in the same way that I finished our retreat together yesterday. And I shared a little snippet from a Rumi poem. So Rumi, for those of you who don't know, is a Sufi mystic and poet. And part of a poem that he wrote called The Great Wagon, which doesn't sound very spiritual, does it? But it's this series of little bits, and this is just one section of it. He says this: out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. Ideas, language, even the phrase each other doesn't make any sense. There's an invitation to come out into a wide space where we can meet God, meet ourselves. Your elders want to offer this invitation. Are you willing? Are you willing to go? So I want to finish with a song now. This song comes with a PG warning. There's one little bit of language. It's minor, I think. But this song is drawing on what Rumi said about going out and meeting in the field. And it's called One. The song is called One. And it's really about, I love the poem you shared as well, Jenny, the Mary Oliver. It's one of my favourites as well, about let's stop asking, you know, like the questions and trying to get it right. Let's just meet God where we are. Come as we are. Let's meet God. Let's come face to face with God and ourselves. And there we will find our oneness. So I'll share this song with you. It's by a band called Bird Talker.
I've played the teacher, the preacher, guru, maintaining posture, separating me and you, as if the thoughts of God were mine and mine to speak. I've listened with an agenda so I could prove all of the shit I believe to be true, just to hide the fear of being weak. Burn the scorecards, balance out the scales. We are one when distracted by our differences. Underneath what's detectable with eyes, every particle's vibrating with the same light. On your tongue, shut your brain up long enough to hear the lowly hum. Underneath what's detectable with eyes, every part of me vibrating with the one light. Yeah.
notions of me we finally agree don't mean a thing.
Burn the smoke cards, balance out the scales. We are one when distracted by our differences. Stamp those eager protestations on your tongue. Shut your brain up long enough to hear the lonely hum. Underneath what's detectable with eyes, every particle's vibrating with the one love.
So anyone want to express thoughts that they had, questions?
I'd just be interested in hearing from people. Was that similar to what we had last week, or were there common themes? The two readings were identical. Two of the readings were identical. I just kept sitting there thinking, fine, yes, these people are hearing the same thing twice in a row, you know? Did anybody else get that, or was it just me? Just that whole thing about the need for an individual response to God.
I was just going to say, it feels to me like, and I thought this for, you know, a couple of decades now maybe, it feels to me like a whole lot of theology is driven by fear of getting it wrong, that somehow we can get it wrong, and that if we get it wrong, then everything is catastrophic. And actually, I think that's part of what Claire really kind of drove home to me, is that, you know, it doesn't matter if we get it wrong, you know, God is bigger than that somehow.
Just a simple one there. Kathy, you said fear can be debilitating when I'm afraid of what I'm afraid of. I can relate to that.
Something you said early on and repeated a few times throughout was that this is not for the faint-hearted. And as one of the faint-hearted, I said, well, what do you got for us, was what I was thinking. But I do feel like you actually did address that, and that maybe this is a message, in fact, actually for the faint-hearted.
Part of Jan Richardson's poem, you know, but I think you are made of stronger stuff and more tender than you already know. So, yeah, that's a good part of
that. I've been thinking about this sort of idea for a few weeks now, and what started it was when Steve McKinnon was here, and he gave us examples of people from his life that had met God and it changed their life. I just got thinking about this thing of here's this God that we can meet and it seems to change us. And it was just quite refreshing for me to hear these stories from Steve, because you can sometimes get caught up in living life and forget that there are people meeting God and that's changing their life. He gave, you know, good, real examples.